I'm Carrie Lloyd, and you're listening to the Carry On Podcast. Come and stay a while amid the British charm that is called my brain. I'm a journalist and pastor in California, but don't hold that against me. I wasn't brainwashed. I chose to leave my atheism on my own accord, consequently after two sips of Kool-Aid. But that's for another time. These opinions are my own, most of the time. The humour was learned of a book I found in a hedge, and the dreamer in me, well, she's here to stay. So, you're very welcome.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lovely to have you back. Would you believe it? We've managed to do about two, three podcasts. Is that right, Jeremy? I'm not sure. This year, I know you're thrilled with that information, because normally I've only been doing about one a year in the last 2 years. But today I wanted to talk about a pretty important subject, and it's a definition that we've been using, I think, for the last few years, certainly very popular in the last year, and that's on gaslighting. And I've even been having conversations with people significantly older than me that have gone, what on earth is gaslighting? What is this? Because as far as they're concerned, that means putting out gaslights in a street. So for the definition of what gaslighting actually means, I'm actually going to read you a definition, and just to make it all clear that we're all on the same page. So gaslighting is a psychological manipulation of a person that causes them to question their own reality, perception or memories, and typically leads to confusion, loss of confidence and self-esteem, uncertainty of one's emotions or mental stability, and a dependency on the perpetrator. It actually comes from the title of a play in 1938, where a man was attempting to make his wife believe that she was going insane. His mysterious activities in the attic caused the house gaslights to dim, but he insists to his wife that the lights are not dimming and that she can't trust her own perceptions. I'm not going to get too specific as to who's gaslighting at this moment. I want to make sure that I'm making a level statement in the next 30, 40 minutes of talking about gaslighting. But I do believe that the Lord is recalibrating the church an awful lot. I think certain events, scenarios, whether it's abuse, whether it's moral failure, or whether it's actually just demeaning someone's experience of their life's pain, the church is being ruffled in its feathers. And I really do believe that it's not a coincidence that I think we're following after the Me Too movement an awful lot of the time. I remember working in the industry, and I've mentioned this before, that at that time when we were working in the 90s, it wasn't a done thing to raise the alarm, to report, to share of anything that might have been a mistreatment, never mind sexual abuse. We had this understanding that in order to belong to the community, to the environment that we were in, that we actually had to make sure that we were abiding by the rules and regulations to not ruffle the feathers ourselves. And I think what's been happening is that kind of culture can take place over many, many years and many, many decades until it's happened to so many people that they finally shout and raise the alarm. The same has been happening in the church. And some of that is, I honestly believe, some of it is a cultural teaching of how we teach and treat people. And because perhaps we didn't come from legal, ethical movements that have to be much more litigious, so to speak, in the space of the workplace, I've started to personally start to raise the alarm with people more in human resources of churches, and making sure that HR directors are actually involved in more of the senior management meetings right from the get-go, to make sure that employment law and protocols are put in place, to make sure that there is actually a safeguarding around male and females within the workplace and within the church environments. Because we haven't had those things, we're actually seeing a huge amount of mess rise to the surface, and essentially it's muddying the waters the deeper we get. And that's not a bad thing. We need to expose, and everything that needs to come into the light does come into the light at some point. And sometimes it can be cast off and gaslit as bitterness, as someone that's just attacking, or they're considered to be disloyal. On another way, let's say the injustice isn't quite as rife as that, but perhaps there's someone suffering with depression or mental health issues. What a lot of time people have been experienced depression, they're given accusations that they don't have enough faith, that they need to be praying more, they need to be fighting for their healing. And often that can actually add to the depression itself. Often when I've had clients who have been sexually abused or have been abused in the workplace, the abuse itself was not half as hard as the people that were denying that the abuse even happened. So this is about gaslighting, this is about denial, and the importance of what we do as leaders when we're approached with an accusation or when we're actually challenged with allegations that are happening, and how we handle those things to make sure that we are actually receiving feedback, that we even have a feedback culture. A lot of churches don't have it. And so I want to kind of share a little bit about that. And I also want to talk a little bit about what can happen if we do continue to let gaslighting be such a prevalent part of the process, both inside and outside the church. The effects of being gaslit aren't just that we're sort of demeaning someone's experience. I can already hear, in a way, me sharing about those that feel gaslit. Well, then you've got a generation that will go, oh, for goodness sake, we're just pandering to every complaint, every menial thing that will happen. We need to toughen up a bit. We need to be more resilient. We need to be less offendable. But then that instantly does gaslight those that have actually found pain and an experience of sexual perpetration, all the way through to just demeaning someone's experience of depression or mental health issues. Now, one of my clients actually was willing to share a letter that she wanted me to read out. I'm obviously not going to name her, but I wanted to make sure that you got a little taste of a story or an experience. I can share my own, but sometimes it's, if not more powerful, to share somebody else's, especially her particular story, because this is how far and how stretched gaslighting can go and the effects of what can happen if we demean or dismiss someone's experience. Even if we don't agree with them, we have to give room to listen to the pain and the hurt and the confusion of what's being caused. So I'm going to read out this letter, and I'm going to try and keep it together as well, because obviously I do get attached to my clients and I do get attached to their stories. And I have to say, before I read this out, her story has been extraordinary in how she's fought for herself and often had to do it alone. Times she's wanted to find people to listen to her. I've obviously been, as a pastor and now a coach, I've often been the one that people run to going, no one's listening to me, no one's hearing me. And equally, the amount of stories I've heard where the dismissal from leadership or the refusal to give it much thought or wanting to fix them instantly has then created this gaslight experience where they feel more isolated and more alone than ever before. And that's just not what the church was built for. So this is her letter. I've changed the name in this as well to make sure there's full confidentiality. But I'm just going to read it out verbatim, so I'm not paraphrasing the story. I'm a Christian with PTSD, depression, and anxiety. This sentence does not imply that God is not indeed Jehovah Rapha, our healer. It means sometimes he doesn't remove us from our storms, but joins us in our storms. As a young woman, I was raised in churches that insisted it was a spirit of depression or an attack, or that my faith wasn't strong enough. This did nearly irreparable damage to my relationship with God. I stayed so upset with him because I thought he wasn't healing me because I wasn't good enough. Coming from an abusive home, this was just solidifying my deficit of self-esteem. I needed the church to tell me about hope. I needed the church to say that Jesus and therapy are not mutually exclusive terms. It's not an either-or situation, it's both and. Our area didn't have a mental health system really established, so just to add some additional trauma, I was actually arrested and held for 4 days, 3 nights for a cop doing logistical gymnastics to figure out what to do with a depressed adolescent in an abusive home, full stop. I mean, solitary confinement, orange jumpsuit, shackles, waist chain and handcuffs. Note the opposite idea of a good idea for a teenager in distress, just to clarify. I struggled through the years hanging on by a thread, just long enough to get into the military and get out of the South. I don't need to tell you that the military itself is a mental health crisis. Within 6 months of entering the Navy, I was sexually assaulted. I kept that a secret and buried it for years. While in the military, I was able to bury my declining mental health from focusing on the missions. Not only that, I was almost encouraged to bury my mental health concerns in order to maintain a top secret clearance. It's not that I was at risk to national security. There was a stigma that you would lose your clearance if you even step foot in a mental health clinician's office. I eventually crossed the threshold of that door and was prescribed an SSRI. For those who are in England or don't quite know what that definition is, it's basically an antidepressant. Consequences followed. I was put on a 90-day hold from deploying until they knew what side effects I would encounter. Now, most of us know that was not a punishment, but a protocol. It prevented me from deploying on time with my crew, and I felt an immense amount of shame. I picked up quickly after the 90-day period and deployed as per usual and continued on with life. For the rest of my time in the military, I was pretty stable despite seeing and encountering horrendous acts and terrible humans. Where was God in this? I'm not sure. We weren't speaking. I got out of the Navy and stayed in the defense industry, all while maintaining, all was squared away. Bit by bit, pieces of me started to fall apart and my facade was failing. Yet again, when the intrusive thoughts and depression were screaming, I was too worried about my clearance to seek more intensive treatment. March of 2022, I was gainfully employed in a job supporting the warfighters while fighting my own war every day when I got home and had nothing to distract myself. It was finally to the point where I was so tired of fighting to live, I slept with my pistol, just hoping I'd find the courage to finally pull the trigger. I intended on taking my life during one specific week, but was abruptly halted 3 days prior. I got a phone call on the way to work that one of our most incredible members of our church had taken her life, a social worker, a missionary, a friend to all. The friend who called me to tell me the news heard my silence, and then with zero control over my body, my mouth vomited the words, "I was going to do it this week too." I was in such shock that Grace had made that choice, and I was so terrified in that moment that I was about to do the same thing. This friend that heard me say this immediately leapt into action, no judgment, no questions. While we all grieved the loss of Grace, my church quietly surrounded me and did whatever it took to get me from one day to the next. Not once did someone say, "You should pray more. Build your faith. It's the devil, rebuke it." They acknowledged that I was sick and needed treatment. They showed up. Some friends helped me store my firearms until I was safe. Some friends scheduled my appointments. Some friends basically force-fed me. And others found a way for me to take a month off to focus on seeking intensive help. This is how the church should intervene in those facing suicidal ideations. We are a body. We are not a building. The church has to start discussing these difficult topics and facilitating the access to resources. Mental illness is not a respecter of persons. It affects 1 in 5 adults. The statistics are even higher in youths, minorities, and veterans. 22 veterans per day end their lives. The battlefield doesn't end when you land back in America. Resources are becoming more prevalent in America, but there is still an epidemic. We can advertise the 988 hotline, the Veterans Crisis Line, and all of these things, but how are we holding and loving those teetering on the edge? They're not insane. They're not possessed. They're not faithless. They're often sick. It's an invisible injury that must be addressed, and I will shout this from the rooftops until I see Jesus face to face if it means one person changes their mind. You are not your illness. You are not your trauma. You are sick. It's neurochemistry. There are a plethora of treatment options available. The one option that isn't available to you is giving up. Stay here. The update is that these days I've left the defense industry behind and I'm currently working on a psychology major at university, working towards becoming a psychiatric substance abuse registered nurse or maybe even a psychologist. Ellipses, she's put, wherever he opens the doors. There's something about these stories that if we actually take a moment to listen to them, the Lord does record every tear in his book, which says it in Psalms, and there are so many times where we can easily misguide scripture in order to defend the church rather than defend those that are struggling. And one of the conversations I've been having about this topic was with a friend even this morning, and I kind of want to quote a little bit of what she said because I feel like it's something really important to acknowledge. Another part of gaslighting for me, and I have to say this as a pastor, I've been in that position where I have actually gaslit people that have come to me, especially when I was in a church surrounded by a culture that it was kind of modeled. We built a case pretty much on an accusation or an allegation that came towards us before we even really asked questions. There are times that we listened to one side of the case, but we wouldn't listen to the other side of the case. And before we knew it, by the time they were in, we'd already made a decision. The jury was already out and already made their decision before there were any eyewitness accounts or any kind of processing or even an explanation. there was one time as well where, and my mother talked about this, and I think I've written about this somewhere, where a young boy at school, when she was a teacher, was building a reputation for stealing things, specifically food. So much so that he was being isolated and outcast and wasn't trusted anywhere because, of course, he was stealing food from people's handbags and money from different people's handbags. And it ended up being that there was a big case being built against him that he should be excluded. Well, thankfully, the headmaster said, I'd like to actually have a conversation with him first. So he brought him in and asked him questions. And the boy basically explained and owned up to the fact that he had stolen money and food from different people. When the headmaster sort of inquired into the reasons why, which is a very important part, by the way, when we're inquiring why someone has fallen or sinned or created some kind of moral failure that is breaking the hearts of other people around you, you do need to start asking why. And it actually helps explain the story a little bit. And sometimes it doesn't explain the story. It certainly doesn't justify the story. But sometimes we can get into a position where we find compassion and are able to find some rehabilitation program that can help those particular people. And what happened with this boy was that his mother had died at a very young age for him. And very swiftly, the father remarried a much, much younger woman who actually got jealous of the attention and the affection that the father would give the boy. So she would often starve him, and she would often never leave any food for him available. There would be days where he wouldn't be able to eat, and so he would hoard food from the school and from any way that he could possibly find it in order to be able to sort of take care of himself. With such deep neglect, you can understand why such drastic measures were happening. But thankfully, because the headmaster didn't gaslight or build a case against that particular boy, it meant that there was a greater context for both of the sides and both of the understanding. Of course, the headmaster made sure that the boy could actually eat for free at school and would make sure that he had some money, enough money to take care of himself in the morning, in the weekends and the times that he wasn't at school. It also implemented a meeting for him to be having a conversation with the stepmother and with the father. That was years ago. And I wish that there had been more models like that, more moments where someone had seen a behavior, something that is out of whack, something that doesn't feel right. We need to have more of a space in the church where if a girl feels like there was a very uncomfortable conversation with a male leader, let me give an example. Let's say, for example, someone's come forward and they've confessed something they've sexually done, a moral escapade that basically was stretching over physical boundaries. Well, I've heard dialogues be said where it's not enough that they just say they've extremed on physical boundaries. They need to be honest about what they've done. I've also been on the receiving end of this, where a male has basically asked the details of what happened, what was involved, to a point you're actually reliving the trauma over again. You're also being shamed, and it's also sexual perpetration, because there's no need for a male to listen to a female in a solo place alone for the details of what she was getting up to. Essentially, he's now visualizing it in his own mind. So there has to start to be more protocols and more visible linear boundaries between how we are talking about such intimate encounters that we might feel safe enough. We're coming to the church for refuge, for safety often. We're coming because we believe that these people that are leaders to us are our safety spot. They're our fathers and they're our mothers. And then sometimes it feels that even though we just divulged all of this information, then that information is used against them, or it can be used in sexual perpetration. Now, this is not necessarily trained, even in the massive churches and the ones with extraordinary amounts of brilliant staff and brilliant, safe people, but there only needs to be one person that isn't doing a great job with that, and it basically makes the church crumble. I've often seen a lot of times where we're trying to cover the brand management of a church rather than actually taking care of the outcasts, the lost, the ones that are not being heard. We need to be humble enough as elders in the church body, and we need to stop the celebrityism around Christians and Christian leaders, because what that does is create a dire need to protect the reputation of ourselves. I remember even saying to a friend a few years ago, I want to be in a workplace where I can make a mistake, because I do make mistakes and I've often confessed those mistakes. But there are times where it's becoming so highly heralded on morality. And that's, of course, what the church is continually talking about, living a good life, being good people, leading a Christian life. And then what's the opposite there when we get it wrong? Punishment and a pit of vipers that are just going to eat you alive. You can understand sometimes where it does become very hard for any kind of major leader to actually confess what they've done, because it really is a terrifying space to come out and be the open. However, leaders, please hear me out. It is incredibly healing when you have a leader apologize for their mistakes. It's incredibly healing when they stop defending themselves and they actually own their own foibles, their own mistakes, when they actually look into the reasons why. So often we only find out these moral failures when it's too late. And what I'm trying to encourage as a solution to this is making sure that we do have human resources involved in senior leadership meetings, that they are absolutely looking for the best of everyone involved, not just leadership, not just those that have created the church for a very long time. And we also have to recognize that every generation changes and we are continually evolving. So it's not enough now that we are protecting and covering. I'm happy for us to cover the church, absolutely. But I also have to make sure that we're in a position where we too as leaders are accessible, approachable, and able to go, yeah, I got that wrong. It's amazing how healing it can be when someone just goes, wow, I really messed that up and I wish I could have done that another way. Pride and ego really need to be removed so that gaslighting stops. One of the things that my friend said this morning, and this is what I kind of want to read out again, not to paraphrase her, she basically said, if a church system is allowed the growth of that leadership, then the whole church covered for it. Then when a person attempts to share abuse or mistreatment, the system has been calibrated to protect leaders, not to serve others. What I think we need most is true humility in the church boards and leadership to truly ask, what qualities of leadership have we really protected? Are we disposed to talk loyalty and press for proof because we believe leaders have a special spot in God's heart? Or are we set to walk humbly together and listen to every choice because we believe God hears the cry of the lonely? My friend Teresa Archer also said this. She said, I believe our space for gaslighting is connected to a real lack of God's heart for the downcast, the poor, the lonely, and the needy. If we focus on the margins in other places when a person comes with a story of pain, there would be our focus, not the leader. Christians are called to the poor in spirit, not the high in power. And I completely agree with her in this particular moment. Narcissism comes from pain, and it comes from perhaps being modeled narcissistic behaviors already. We do everything we can to get into a powerful spot, and we repeat the same experiences that we had a long time ago. I too have been in that position. It's probably about 4 or 5 conversations that I wish I'd done very differently, where someone was in pain and they came to me and I corrected them. I wish I'd given more space and time to really listen. I wish I'd asked, what could I have done differently? I wish I'd asked, is this really worth fighting for? In the sense of, I'm wanting so badly to make sure that my pastoral guidance towards them, I believe in them so much, sometimes I'm fighting with them against themselves for way more than they're really willing to listen to. It's not worth it. It's actually more important to actually come and meet them where they're at. It's more important to listen to what they do want. There's no point in wasting your energy trying to correct people when they're actually not in that space. And you can't correct someone if you're also not listening to their feedback, if you're not willing to be approachable and say, oh wow, I didn't realize that that's how I was coming across. I remember in one particular meeting that there was this sort of clashing going on between me and the other person, and I remember bringing a boss in and they were explaining to me that, I don't think you realize how intimidating you can be as soon as you come into a room, and you've got to give 10 minutes and give them half an hour if necessary for them to share how they're feeling, for them to feel their voice. And I think anyone in any kind of authoritative dynamic, father or mother, boss, they have to recognize that it's our job to go much lower into the position than them, because we do, by natural default, have more authority and more power and more of a say-so of what happens next. So therefore, it is our duty to serve those that we've been pastoring and guiding, to make sure that we're actually listening to the foibles and the difficulties of what's happened. I also want to challenge one of the things where people have often said, well, why didn't they report it straight away? Let me try and explain it from my point of view, because there's stuff that is coming up for me only 7 years later after an incident that I experienced. Now, I did report that recently. However, I didn't report it officially, because I also knew that those particular leaders involved weren't the kind of soil that want to get feedback. But I know at some point they're going to get into really tricky water if the behaviors don't change. And so I shared this with a person that some point down the line is going to have a rather large say-so. I also have had two dreams about particular churches being fed with legal lawsuits, specifically not because of any particular massive moral failure, but because we're now fighting so hard to have our voice heard that now we're looking into everything, every area of where we have been mistreated. And so it's really important to make sure that we are meticulous on making sure that we are treating people well, that we are not using any sign of misogyny. Most sexual abuse does happen from men towards women. So we have to make sure that even if we have a male heavy authority, that we do have female authorities also involved that are also going to understand the vulnerability of being a woman when we have those moments coming towards us. We have to make sure that when you have, let's also take another example that I've been witnessing an awful lot, and it's a real problem for me, is because we have this element of authority that we believe that we, these people are accountable to us, we'll hear a story or we'll be told of an allegation or a story about the particular person we're taking care of, and we'll go and share that with a couple of other leaders because we're trying to get fed some solutions, some understanding of what this should look like and how we should handle this particular case scenario. But I've also watched it where we're talking to way more leaders than we need to, and we're also talking to a plethora of different people purely to be verbally processing. That is in the space that is keeping, therefore, the people involved that you're supposed to be covering and protecting and keeping guard from, a safeguarding, if that makes sense, of both accusation, but also making sure you're kept in check for your own behaviors. We have to make sure that we're not verbally processing because we're worried that our own reputation is being damaged here, that we are so frustrated we're just gonna verbally process through a bunch of other people. I really believe that you process with about 4 or 5 people, at least one of those is a boss or someone of covering to you. And then you have also involved the people that you are navigating this case with. Sometimes only one person that comes with an accusation, they're the ones that are protected. I also have been a female in environments where they've taken the male understanding of the story because it just suited them better. They were more useful to them in this particular dynamic than I was. And I wasn't even brought into the room for questioning. I wasn't even asked the question. They literally had made a decision and a conclusion and told me we're not talking about it anymore. That particular person was domestically violent and was still being hired to be in the particular space he was in. And so that for me then makes me very isolated, lonely, gaslit. And the only one I feel like is actually able to be a witness in the whole thing is our good Lord. So there are times that I know the importance of actually making sure we have both sides of the story coming into the equation. And if you are starting to build a case against one of them without having a conversation, I swear it's part of our journey to make sure we're repenting of that stuff too, because that's not fair, especially if someone has changed the story and gaslit someone in order to protect their reputation, their name. And the reason why we don't report these things is because we don't want to be outcast. We don't want to be isolated. We don't want to have a bunch of people gossiping in the environment about our particular case scenario. We have to get the church safe. And it doesn't mean safe around the leaders. It means that the congregation is safe. It's safe in regards to making sure that we are stewarding well the hearts of every single soul that comes into the sanctuary of a church. It's ensuring that we make sure that we are listening to the stories, and that we are actually fighting for those that don't have as much of a voice as other people might in the church. I remember as well in Hollywood, two very, very famous celebrities. One female had made the other male, very, very famous. And he became even more famous than she did and very, very successful. But he also was morally failing against her after many, many years of a friendship and relationship. And sadly, the whole community went with this one, because sometimes we're leading towards the favor and the power of people, because that also means that we still belong. We still get to be safe within the sense of our career, within our power dynamic. We're all guilty of it. And yet I think it's incredibly important that if you are placed in positions of power, that it's incredibly important to create conversations, that you actually are speaking up for those that are the poor in spirit, not the high in power. It's incredibly important that we start to make space, that we start to create an understanding of what it looks like, that we stop denying people's experiences, that we stop gaslighting. And it's important for us all to understand that the mind mapping that can actually happen. And I think this is something that'd be really interesting for you guys to look into, especially if you feel like you've been on the other end of mind mapping and control. Mind mapping is basically a form of gaslighting or manipulation that makes you believe the story is different to how it actually is. And for me, myself, when I've tried to approach leaders or when I've tried to challenge people on their behavior and what was not godly behavior, it's often been defended. It's often been shut down. Now, all that really needs to understand for those that have been gaslit, isolated, outcast, and the narrative is not who you are, I completely understand where you're at. I understand the meaning. It's just like our friend here that just wanted to cut it dry and wanted to say goodnight, because the pain gets so isolating and so lonely that if you're listening to this and you're feeling to that point of wanting to just end the pain, I've been in spots where I too have been on suicide watch, and I don't want you to be in the same position or to feel like you're alone. What I want you to know is that our leaders out there trying really hard to fight for those that haven't been given a voice or have been dismissed or have been accused of being bitter or have been accused of being mentally deranged or have been accused of whatever the story is that you're having to hold right now. My heart is that you understand there are people that have been in your shoes and are in leadership and are fighting for your name, for your voice, for this to stop. My biggest fear is that people just leave the church, that we are on this vast wave of deconstruction, as I was pointing out in the sermon I did at Bethel Church a few weeks ago. Cancel culture, we just want to cancel the church, but I'm begging people to actually stay in the room and have these conversations where we are actually having very uncomfortable conversations. But leaders, if you want people to still come to your church, you have to make room for feedback. You have to make room for vulnerable people who are utterly terrified that you're going to gaslight them, that they actually know that you're a safe space to come to and that you're actually going to listen. I remember speaking to someone not many moons ago where I talked about being on suicide watch because of all that I'd gone through. And I was told that it was probably demonic. No, it wasn't. It was just a lot of pain, a lot of isolation, a lot of being misunderstood. And so there are times for sure that you can have all sorts of demonic journeys and attacks that can make you have mental health issues, but we can't always put it to that. Sometimes it's us that's causing the mental health problems. Sometimes it's abuse that is causing trauma that is causing mental health issues. And so we need to start being more honest. We need to start having an and both approach of Jesus and people that have studied for a very long time in therapy, that will be an amalgamation of both, that we can do much better when it comes to trauma, that we actually make sure that there is a space to process and heal from trauma, and that we're actually giving a space that is safe enough to find hope again. And just like our friend was saying, I wanted someone to give me hope. Sometimes we think that fixing it is part of the hope. It's not. Sometimes it's just very hopeful to know that you've got a safe space, that they're not going to share your information and share it to everyone else, nor even make an adjudication that something's wrong with you. But actually, leaders are coming forward going, I could have done that better and I'm so sorry. We need to actually be as humble, if not more humble, than the congregation to make sure that we're actually modeling what does it look like when we've actually caused hurt and behavioral issues. Sometimes these people who have created abuse, they generally believe their own story. So that's why they're feeling like they're gaslighting you, because they generally can't see what you're talking about. They don't think that there's been sexual perpetration. They don't feel like they've gossiped, because gossip is such a normal, everyday occurrence, because they believe that they have the right to talk about you, your private life, towards everyone else in leadership. And so this is the journey that I'm trying to navigate now, is making sure that I'm coming into different churches and I'm talking to HR, I'm talking to leaders going, you actually need to understand the importance of human resources, have to have a much more stronger voice in the room. It actually benefits leaders to make sure that they're following employment law and employment law protocols, especially when it comes to male and female dynamics and the opposing, especially when there is a male leader and a female employee underneath it. We have to be, not to a point where we're paranoid all the time, but we have to make sure that we're actually creating enough protocols that we know the clear boundaries and the clear lines of what was too much, what went too far, and where this all got very muddy. And we don't want to be a church. We don't want to be a church with a capital C known for gaslighting people. We want to be known as the refuge, the ones that took care of the orphans and the widows. And we're not doing that very much at the moment. Equally, when we have allegations going towards major leaders or small minor leaders, we have to always make sure that they too have a friend, that they have someone to speak to, because it's pretty lonely when you're getting to that space of moral failure. We have to make sure that we are always seeking rehabilitation in each other and making sure that we have accountability and open conversation, that we have third-party investigations into the church, that we're not just using lawyer firms that are protecting us in the journey. It's incredibly important that we don't have a bias of wanting to protect brand management because we think that protects the church. If you really want to protect the church, then you're going to protect the people that are coming in on a Sunday, coming to listen to the goodness and the presence of the Lord. And so that's my tuppence worth on gaslighting. And I feel sometimes if we're not keeping each other accountable, especially as a safe space, and of course, you know, I wouldn't be reading this letter had it not been given approval and acknowledgement from that particular person that read it. Even now, I wanted to make sure that I changed particular names to make sure that she was covered. And I also wanted to make sure there wasn't any kind of element that could be suggested of who that might be. I've been so grateful to the ones that have finally found a voice to be courageous enough to speak up and stand out. But I also have to make sure that we're going from a pace of courage. And courage doesn't involve bitterness. So sometimes we're speaking out against these things, but we're not recognizing that's a pretty brutal way of doing it. We do need to speak out. We also need to make sure that our speaking out is fruitful, that we're not turning into a vitriolic dialogue and just bashing someone through a screen. We do need to make sure we're having one-on-one face-to-face conversations so we can actually feel that the other person, regardless of how wrong they got it or how badly they did, that they're actually a person, they're a human. We've all got it wrong. We've all done a really, really bad job at times. Not so much as some of the others, I get that. But there's also a journey where I really want the rehabilitation of leaders who have been misogynistic, that have taken advantage, of their authority, or had this is all they've known in their world and they'll do anything to protect it. So I want to make sure that we're coming from a space when we do see injustice in the church, that we are having conversations that allow dialogue both ways, that we're not gaslighting leaders because we've heard a case here, but we haven't actually had a conversation with them. We need to make sure that even when we have got it really wrong, that we're soft enough for the confession. And I can't tell you how gorgeous it is when a leader goes, I'm so sorry, I got it wrong, and I will do anything to try and make what I did change and be better. When they don't do that, that's when you'll start to hear a very, very loud crowd of protesters and shouts. If you're feeling like there's some sort of attack or demonic attack going on towards the churches, can we pull it down a few pegs and say, actually, the reason why they're shouting so loud is because you weren't listening to them when they came to you directly and when they were providing smaller, tinier reports. Because so many events were happening, we don't want to see churches not listening upstream, to have a massive flood further down the road. We really want to make sure that we can catch these things in the bud to avoid as much destruction and as much distrust as possible. It's the church's job to try and build trust, and it's not the church's job to try and protect their name. We can't defend ourselves when we've done something wrong, and we also have to make sure that we're willing to clean up our mess when we've done it. Any of this kind of bravado or vocabulary that isn't as honest and as transparent as it needs to be is a major, major issue that we need to look at. So I think these things are being exposed to recalibrate the church and create a more even level, losing the hierarchy, not perhaps having so many people on a food chain level where no one gets to attack the lion. You know, we're in a space now where we're like, actually, we need to perhaps just go back to the former body of what the church was, which was a group of elders that aren't really known for anything other than being safe fathers and mothers and making sure that we're doing a good job of providing resources and services to our local towns, and making sure that those that are well known for being speaking and preachers can go around more on an itinerant level, but we're not putting all the onus on them or buffing the ego so much that they feel like they have to protect their reputation when they've got it wrong. We've been seeing over many different movements, many different scenarios, that people have actually been trying to cover so much, as they've got themselves so deep, they're struggling so hard, they're in so much pain, that the moral failure has just become this recumbent thing that they fell into because they just didn't know who was safe enough anymore. The irony is we create our own war within ourselves, and we've forgotten who is safe because we weren't leaders in ourselves safe enough for other people, so we were not safe enough for ourselves. So a few things to acknowledge, a few things to add in just as thoughts as you're seeing some of these movements that are breaking apart, as you're seeing these things take place. And my heart is going out to the survivors and the victims of these experiences that have happened, and we are listening to you. And my heart also goes out for those that wish they could have done it differently and could have done a better job in their approaches, wish perhaps that they had experienced other cultures and not been brought up in one, so they could experience what other cultures have done a very good job with, whereas we may not be doing a very good job. If you're of a big church, my big mega church friends out there, make sure that when you have people coming in from all over the world, they might actually have remedies and solutions that are better than what you're doing right now. They might have methods that are bringing to you. Stop putting them down, stop dismissing them, and make sure that actually that could have been brought to you from the Lord to help your establishment, to help the institution of what you guys have been building for so long. Rather than see it as a criticism, see it as a fruitful piece of advice that will help you guard yourselves from perhaps poor behavior that will come back to bite you. There's two things that I want to suggest on reading. One, which I haven't read myself, but my friend who I trust with her book, Knowledge and Savvy, When Narcissism Comes to the Church, that's one book. And the second one is called Brain Talk. It's about mind mapping and gaslighting with family members and how they can often do that. So that's a lot of information I've given you. I'm going to leave it right there. But know that I'm fighting for those that want to have their voice heard, and for those that have experienced real church hurts. I'm very tempted to write a book on this, to be honest, just in itself. The amount that I've experienced in so many coaching calls, so many friends chats, my own experiences too, I'm realizing that probably 50% of people that are deconstructing is down to church hurts. It's down to once what was their community, their belonging. They gave their lives, their sacrifice for everything for this church, and then they felt completely dismissed. That one sheep that the Lord advises us to run after was left out in the cold and died somewhere, and no one even noticed. I want us to get more into a model where we haven't forgotten the one, and we're not trying to cover up those in power. I loved what my friend said. I said it almost that this is a quote in itself, and I'm going to repeat it again. Christians are called to the poor in spirit, not the high in power. It doesn't mean that we dismiss those that have got power. It doesn't mean that we berate them or demean them. We're not going into that level of privilege stuff again. I think what we have to recognize is when those are in power, we need some people to be in power in order for momentum to keep going, that the world keeps going. I'm glad that we have a prime minister in England. I'm glad that we actually have a monarchy in England for our peace ambassadors that have been trying to rewrite history of what monarchists did do and what the monarchy did do a very long time ago that were deeply atrocious. I'm very glad that we've got people in power that humble themselves to go, yeah, we're going to start decolonizing all of the things that we took over, and we actually need to give back the things that we stole. That's part of what the church should be doing. What do we steal? What do we take advantage of? What were we protecting too much? Where did narcissism get involved? And we keep on pushing this down to attacking or betrayal or bitterness. We actually need to start recognizing, are people feeling safe with us? Are we building enough trust? And are we really taking care? And are we really recording every tear in the book? Because right now I'm not sure we are, but I think we're getting closer to being able to. Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you soon.